Hi, this is Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio. Last week, we interviewed Sonia Gunderson about the film she'll be bringing to Icon on the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st.
Of 2010, for those of you who are listening to a repeat
of this, is a repeat
5 years
show.
From now.
You'll know that this was an event that happened in the history of Icon in 2010.
February.
But if you're listening to it in its the present time, which is February of 2010, on the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st of February, we'll be presenting two Inuit films from the Inuit filmmakers. You probably heard this last week if you listened last week, but we want to go a little deeper into these, talking about these films and a little bit more about the culture. It was so fascinating to talk to her last week. Just before we went on the air, what were we saying? It was interesting. We were talking about
this. You were talking about the Southerner, the difference
the
perspective
difference between the direct,
from the Inuit.
The film we showed last year, Before Tomorrow, was by Zacharias Koenig.
It was actually by a women's video collective that sort of sprang out of Zacharias Koenig's work up in Iqaluit, Nunavut. So all of these are based in the Canadian Arctic.
And The Fast Runner we'll be showing was an earlier film by him that was known, has been played all over the world and has won numerous awards. And we thought it would be fun to give everyone a chance to see that film, even though it's a long film, 3 hours long. But the other was by a French-Canadian director working with this community. And you were just saying how there's a different personality.
Yes.
It has a kind of southern perspective
from
Montreal instead of above the Arctic Circle.
It's interesting actually being up in the Canadian Arctic, which I've been up there I think about 7 times now, because people talk about the South. You know, so what do you mean by the South?
Well, here in America, when we say the South,
we're talking about Atlanta. South Carolina.
For me.
Their view of the South is it would be Ottawa, Montreal, so forth. So they have to go South for medical treatment or South for this or that, or somebody is visiting the community from the South.
So are we in the U.S. in the deep South then?
Oh,
like
yes.
Even those who live in Minneapolis
we're beyond
are in the
imagination
deep South.
Here.
Off the edge of the world.
Actually, I was doing an article about an Inuit sculptor named Abraham Rubin, of all names, who lives out on Salt Spring Island just off of Vancouver. And I went into his house, and his wife, who's also an artist, had done a mosaic on the floor, right where most people would have an area rug. And she had done this mosaic in the floor that was the perspective of the world from the Arctic. So when you would stand in the middle of this mosaic, you would sort of see from the Arctic that everything is south.
Sort of like those maps of New York.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. New York-centric world.
Right, yeah.
But in any case, yeah, these two films are different, even though they both star the same actor, 8 years apart. His name is Natar Ungalik, just a wonderful actor who's won a number of awards, including for The Necessities of Life, which we're going to be showing the Midwest premiere of that here at Icon. For that, he won the Canadian Genie for Best Actor, which is the equivalent of an Oscar. But the perspective of the filmmakers is very different. Zacharias Koenig grew up in the Iqaluit region. The legend that he's portraying in the Fast Runner is from that region and so forth. Whereas Necessities of Life really is telling a story more from an outsider's perspective of what they imagine the Inuit experience to be. And the differences are subtle. I mean, from Zacharias Kunuk's perspective, he wanted to make sure that every detail culturally is absolutely accurate, because he looks at his filmmaking as part of the Inuit oral tradition. So he made sure that, you know, the tattoos on the women's faces were absolutely accurate for that period, that even the language, which, by the way, The Fast Runner is the first feature film that's ever been done in the Inuit language, but even that that language was the ancient form of that language that would have been used at that time, that every smudge on the igloo walls was authentic, you know, for what it would have been at that time and so forth. So he had cultural advisors that were right there on the set all the time, just making sure that the, you know, the stone lamp wasn't an inch too far to the right, you know, or whatever. The Necessities of Life, which is about a hunter who contracts TB and comes to Quebec City to a sanatorium for treatment, shows sort of what the reverse culture shock is when an Inuit hunter comes down and has to sort of live in a more modern Western environment in a hospital. So it was placed in like 1952. And one of the really interesting things, he arrives and most of the time he actually is dressed in caribou skin clothing that his wife would have made from caribou that he had hunted. And there's a really interesting detail there, which is when he's being sent south, he's asked for his ID tag. And there was a period of time where all Inuit, in an attempt for the Canadian government to sort of keep to track them, were assigned numbers, identity numbers. And they wore those in a little sort of leather circular dog tag kind of thing. And so he wears that, and that's to the outside world his identity. To the Inuit, his identity has nothing to do with this little tag that he's wearing and so forth. But outsiders got so confused about all the intricacies of the naming systems in Inuit culture and so forth, they said, we're just going to give them all numbers. And so it was quite dehumanizing, as you can imagine. So, definitely you are getting something of an Inuit perspective from Necessities of Life, but it's not all the nuances of the culture that you get from something like The Fast Runner. And I remember the first time I saw The Fast Runner, which was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was at a large theater there where it was showing, just sensing that I was just having this rare privilege of being allowed to sort of have the curtains part and to experience, you know, all these subtle details of Inuit culture. And it really had an anthropological feel to it, as well as a kind of documentary feel to it. So they're quite different in that way.
So what's the time period that The Fast Runner is set in?
It's like 1,000 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's quite an ancient story that really, is something that was there to pass down very carefully from generation to generation to teach the succeeding generations some Inuit values.
Mm-hmm. How far back does Inuit culture go?
4,000 years, in that region. It's been there for a long time, and we just have no sense of that in our own culture. And the whole preservation of the culture is dependent on the vigilance that people have had in terms of passing down stories and lessons and knowledge accurately. So they're very, very careful about it. And I found, you know, even the times that I've been up there, I mean, the knowledge that people have of the land, we might look out on a horizon with no trees and just see a kind of undifferentiated, you know, if it's covered with snow, it seems kind of undifferentiated. Not at all to them. I mean, they know every little snowdrift, every rock that's there, everything. And so if they were to describe to a fellow hunter, you know, which route to take or something, it would be a very, very detailed kind of description. And the same thing with just their, you know, the powers of observation with other people. They find it very strange that when we white people get together, that we say, how are you? Because to them, they can look at somebody and see how they are. And so that seems
to... And we don't want to know anyway, really.
That's right.
So in their language, do they have many more words about the process of observation and seeing and that, you know, describe all of these subtleties? Because I would imagine if their powers of observation are so acute, there would be a lot of different ways of perceiving that.
Yeah, and when they name anything like a geographical feature or something like that, you know, they would never do like we do, which is like whistling waters or, you know, some kind of romanticized thing to basically kind of a marketing approach to to depicting the environment. They would say, you know, it's the ugly little hill with three boulders at the base and, you know, whatever, whatever. I mean, they would give enough of a description that nobody would have a question about exactly where it is. And, you know, there are other ways that I would see sort of remnants of the oral tradition. I mean, they have incredible memories. So I could ask anybody in Igloolik, which is about 1,600 people, you know, what's the phone number of so-and-so? Bloom, they would be able to tell me. They didn't need phone books.
Here's another interesting thing, because memory is so subjective, you know, to us in our culture, whereas even if I get together with my brother and sister and we share a family memory, it can be completely different and we'll argue endlessly about, no, it happened like this. No, it happened like this. So if they have this clear memory, do they all seem to have the same memory of the same event? Or is there still some subjective differences?
I don't know if I can answer that, you know, in terms of an event itself. Obviously, there must be some variations because, I mean, it's probably so minor compared to what we would have if you've played the game of Secret. You just sort of pass something around and see how quickly it gets distorted. If you're thinking in terms of a legend like the Fast Runner that's been passed down for 1,000 years, you know, what the filmmakers did was they got 8 elders together to get all of their versions of the story, and so there would be slight variations. But that's not too bad for 1,000 years.
For 1,000, yeah, that's pretty amazing.
You know, and then they sort of put together a script, and then they went back to the elders and said, okay, what do you think? And so they all had to agree. And, you know, and the way that they go about that whole process, too, it takes more time because they would get all the elders together and they would just wait until there was a consensus. They wouldn't, you know, nobody would say, okay, I'm making an executive decision here. It's going to be this way. You know, they would just sort of wait until all the elders agreed and then, okay, this is the way it will be.
So the other director, the French-Canadian director who did the Necessities of Life, did he, probably not to the same degree, but did he also talk to authorities on the Inuit culture?
Oh, I'm sure that he did, and did some research on that. The experience of TB was just such a prevalent experience. And an interesting thing that came out after the film was completed was that Natar Ungalik, who starred in the film, disclosed that his father actually, or, I mean, his grandfather actually had gotten TB during the same epidemic that he was playing. And so, you know, that experience is just so familiar to all of the people there. So that's certainly one of the big stories in Inuit culture. It's just what the impact of disease is. And as a matter of fact, in last year's film, Before Tomorrow, if you remember, you know, most of this extended family was wiped out from smallpox. So, but those things in that culture are just taken in stride. You know, the Inuit have such a strong sort of survival instinct that no matter what happens, they adapt and they just sort of continue on. And so the kinds of things that in our society would be considered to be, you know, just devastating and somebody might not recover from, they just bounce back from. I mean, even in the family I was living with, you know, one person while I was there was suddenly flown south to Montreal because they thought that he had TB. He was showing signs of that. It turned out that it was another type of lung disease. In the same week, another brother in the family's child died, and another couple broke up. I mean, it's just like all these things happening, but particularly you're just faced constantly with life and death in ways that we aren't and would be thrown by.
And I felt that there was some cultural difference and almost some degree of culture shock when we showed the film last year, because it was so unlike what we're used to in the normal Hollywood productions that are very fast cut and that film really got down to the direct confrontation of struggle with life and death.
Yes.
And I felt that in the end there was, even though there was the demise of the human beings, that there was a triumph of the spirit, and it seemed like that's what it was all about. But but even the long shots, which made you have that level of observation, whether you wanted it or not, with the little lightings of the candles over a very long scene. Almost all the scenes were very slowly drawn out. And I was thinking, I remember films of my youth and of the past that had a slower pacing, but today it's so fast-paced that it would be very, that it was, I think, perhaps, I think people really enjoyed it, but I think it was a different experience for today's audiences. Are these films more like that in their pacing?
The Fast Runner with Zacharias Kunuk is fairly slow-paced, but also very gripping, because there's so many different things that happen. But the way that he lets you kind of, you know, pause and really take in the Arctic landscape and, you know, the beauty of the shots. And I'm not going to sort of disclose what it is, but people who've seen this film, everybody that's ever seen this film remembers one particular scene that is just beyond belief. And so, you know, there are the scenes of the environment that are just absolutely stunning. He really has a way of capturing the Arctic light and the sort of the expansiveness of the landscape. Just phenomenal.
Well, I was really pounded. Fine, that I was able to offer that experience for people in at ICON.
Yeah.
It's more of a awakening to an art experience of cinema again, which I thought was very nice.
Well, and it's been interesting for me sort of looking back and reading, you know, the reviews of Fast Runner when it first came out, because publication after publication, just the film critics just said, this is totally redefining film. And, you know, and I think part of that is because Zach Kunuk didn't go through the kind of training that other cinematographers have gone through. He just used his eye as an artist and as a hunter and, you know, allows us to really see through that eye. And I think that combined with the fact that he was using handheld video just makes everything very intimate.
So was The Fast Runner as well received in the Arctic as in the rest of the world, like the people themselves?
The people themselves, and that really is Zach Kunuk's first audience.
Huh, that's great.
Yeah, it was interesting. The first time that I interviewed him, which was after The Fast Runner came out, I asked him what was the impression. And he has a habit of always bringing films that he's made to Igloolik first before they're released any place. And so he said that was the only audience I cared about. How would my fellow Inuit and many of the people in that audience had been involved in the making of the film. And of course you don't know what it looks like until it's actually shown. So he said he was nervous. He said he was trembling as they showed the film at the high school there. And then he said at the end of the film, people just stood and clapped and cried. Mm-hmm. And he said, then I knew that we had accomplished what we wanted to. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very modest about the whole thing. And his attitude is, that's his audience. And if anybody else wants to peek over their shoulder, that's fine.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You mentioned that once he got a camera, he started, or a video, he started videotaping everything. Is he trying to document all aspects of the culture so nothing is lost? Is he just shoot everything?
Yeah.
This is besides the films he's making. Is he just documenting all of the whole culture?
Right. Like, I mean, he would be there for any kind of celebration or be out on the land filming. And when I was living up there from 2007 to 2008, but I would also see him at meetings, for instance, when people had come from the South that wanted to mine diamonds or wanted to mine iron ore or something like that, and they would be required as part of an environmental review to meet with people from the community. And they would always schedule those meetings at times they knew that hunters would be out on the land. So those meetings were not very well attended, but Zach would be there with his camera, sort of filming the whole thing. And when I left, the main thing that he was working on, because there is a huge iron ore mine that's being opened there, where they're going to actually have put in a railroad line right through the Arctic tundra, and they're going to then have ships that are taking iron ore to Europe that are going 365 days a year. He said, this environment in 10 years is going to be changed forever. So his focus when I left was to just film everything, document the environment, document people's behavior on the environment as much as he could for future generations.
Mm-hmm. Before we get towards the end of the show, let's say that, will you give the schedule of the showings of these two films so people know?
So we have The Necessities of Life, which is the film about the more modern film that came out in 2008. And we're doing the Midwest premiere on Friday night, the 19th of February, 7:30 p.m. At Icon. And then that film will show again Saturday night, the 20th, and Sunday afternoon, the 21st. The afternoon showing will be at 2 o'clock. And then The Fast Runner, which is a film from Zacharias Kunuk's film from 2001, is going to show Thursday night, the 18th, at 7 p.m. So that's a half hour earlier than the other film, since it's a longer film. And then it will show again Saturday afternoon, the 20th at 1:30, and Sunday evening, the 21st at 7. And the admission for the film will be $10, and that will go to ICON to support their activities.
And we thank you so much for doing this for us.
Oh, ICON deserves all of our support.
Well, thank you. What's our time?
So how much time
left? We have about 4 minutes left.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure we got that in, because we'll get to the end of the show and we'll forget to, and also just to let everybody know, if you tuned in the middle, that we're talking to Sonia Gunderson, who actually has lived with the Inuit people a number of times as a journalist and then just as a lover of their culture.
Yeah, my focus in the research that I've done up there has really been on what they're doing to try to preserve the culture as they face all the pressures of modernization. And Iglulik, the community where Zacharias Kunuk, the film director, is based, is really kind of regarded by the Inuit as the one community that's really putting a lot of conscious effort into preserving the culture. You go to other parts of the Arctic, and many of the Inuit don't even understand their own language, for instance, you know, and are living much more modern lives. And in Iglulik, there's been a conscious choice throughout the years. For instance, when television became available, satellite television became available in the Arctic, the community of Iglulik voted twice not to have it. because they knew as soon as it was instituted that they were going to start to lose the culture. So they said, not until we have Inuit programming available will we have television coming in. Mm. But the truth is, even though they had Inuit television become available, largely thanks to Zacharias Kunuk, still a lot of people watch American Idol and all the other things that we watch in this country. And so the influence is there, and it's very strong.
Well, and you said last time when you gave the show the other films, you were talking about the youth and how there's a great strong desire to re-inspire the youth in the Inuit culture. Is that succeeding? Like, since then, even, has that become stronger? Or because when the elders are no longer there, is Igloolik still, do you think, going to have that strong emphasis in preserving their culture? Is there enough interest among the young to do that?
I think in Igloolik particularly, there is a fair amount of interest. Mm. And there are some sort of unexpected things in Igloolik too, besides Zach Kunuk's film work and culture camps that the elders run on the land and things like that. The sort of surprising influence that's been there is a circus that's been started called Art Cirque, where a French-Canadian circus performer came up and actually started using circus skills as a way to reconnect youth with their culture. Mm-hmm. One last thing I wanted to say is, because I know this is airing during the Olympics, is watch the Olympics. Even the logo has an Inuit icon on it, and so forth, and there's some Inuit programming that will be there as part of the Olympics, so you can enjoy a taste of that.
Oh, great. Hey.
Well, I guess this show ended 30 seconds early.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.